You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I am Allison Footer from MLB.com, and as we look at the NL West as a whole, we see some injuries cropping up with some of the teams, some that are a little more concerning than others. Of course, in San Francisco, the loss of Hunter Pence, who had the longest active playing streak in the majors before this at 383 games. So we're assuming that on opening day that streak will end. He had was hit by a pitch and has a fractured arm, so he's probably going to be out about a month. So that is something the Giants will have to deal with. And then in Padres camp, catcher Tim Fedorovich, he has a tear in the lateral meniscus in his right knee, and so that's going to require some surgery, and so he's going to be out for a while. And then just moving around a little bit, the Dodgers seem to be pretty healthy. Everybody is sort of getting back in the swing of things. Things look pretty good there. And of course in Colorado, everyone's just watching Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez as they come off injuries, just an injury-riddled season for the entire team, but certainly those two are in the spotlight because they are expected to carry the offense as usual. And then in Arizona, Yosemite Tomas, we're not really sure exactly how he's going to pan out at third base, but he's not injured, of course, but he's still trying to get his feet under him defensively at third base, and they're just hoping for an average to slightly below average showing from him at third and just swinging a hot bat, and that should pretty much solidify his presence in the Diamondbacks order. So that's what we have going on in the NL West here in person with my colleague Ken Gernick. Covers the Dodgers for MLB.com, and Ken, we're actually recording this right after we watched Zach Greinke pitch against the Cubs in Mesa, so he seemed to be pretty okay with his outing when he spoke to the media afterward. What did you think of that?
It was a first outing, especially for guys a little behind schedule. He had the elbow injection when camp opened, and he's a start behind, and he wasn't sharp. Got through it okay. He said he was healthy. That's the number one goal. Needs to work on his slider, he said. He wasn't thrilled with that. But it was a decent first start for a guy who's a little behind schedule. Whether he'll be ready to go 7 or 8 innings the first week of April, that'll be the question.
It's very exciting from a fan base to come to a game when John Lester is starting and Zach Greinke is starting, but really you can't really glean too much from all of this. It's more hype than it is really anything else, right?
Well, that's spring training, really. That's the definition of spring training. It's more hype for the players. It's getting in shape, and they don't have to be in shape on March 11th. So, you know, especially a guy like Greinke's been through it, and Lester too. You know, it's different if you're an 18-year-old like Julio Urias, and you know, you're trying to impress people, and you're facing the heart of the Cubs order, and you might crank it up a little bit and get a little wild and fall behind. But when you're a veteran like Lester and Greinke, you know that this is just one step, and you don't have to be ready today. So they pace themselves, and the main thing is health. And right now, it seems like Greinke's healthy.
So it's not often that you'll see a headline with a star player that he's playing good defense. But we talk about Yasiel Puig, of course. That's been sort of an ongoing topic with him, is that he needs to kind of get his head in the game a little bit more, concentrate a little bit more. And there seems to be some pretty favorable returns this early in spring training as far as how he's been performing.
Yeah, he's so talented that he's really been able to get away with things in the past. And the Dodgers are trying to rein him in and get his head in the game. And sometimes he just reacts and he looks like, you know, like a phenom, and he is. But when he pays better attention and focuses to the game, he's even better. And, you know, he showed it again today, and he showed it all spring, really. He's cutting balls off. He's throwing to the right base. He's quieter in the clubhouse. He just seems to be, you know, growing up, I guess, is what the Dodgers would tell you. And it looks like it's for real. And, you know, we know what he can do when he's hitting. He needs to cut down on the slumps. His slumps tend to last for weeks, if not a month. He needs to cut that down. But so far, he's saying and doing all the right things here in spring training.
And really, when it comes to, I mean, there's two different kinds of people. If they need to work on things as far as their attitude goes, or they need to grow up, like you said, I mean, Yasiel Puig at his core is a pretty good guy. I mean, we're not talking about like, you know, a real grumpy person or just not, you know, kind of a mean guy coming in and trying to totally change him. I mean, this is somebody who has the basic stuff to be a pretty affable person.
Oh, he's a fun-loving guy, yeah. And he's gotten along with the media for the most part. He gets along with his teammates for the most part. He hasn't been schooled in the way that baseball is played in the major leagues, and he has a flair that's sort of the Cubans are sort of known for, and that can rub people the wrong way. But his teammates love what he can do on the field, and that's always the bottom line. And as long as you put up, you know, you can pretty much get away with whatever you want. Showing up late for games, as he's done in the past, you can't get away with that. So, you know, that's the inexperience and the immaturity that they're working on. And like I said, so far this spring, he's been a model citizen, and the Dodgers are really happy with what they've seen so far.
I want to talk a little bit about the back end of the rotation. I love Brett Anderson's tweet. Oh, you're starting today. Have fun expelling everything in your system beforehand. So we had some nerves. Kind of made its way around the Twitterverse a little bit because it's very funny. But he kind of settled in and he looked pretty good too. And he's got to be feeling pretty good about how things are so far.
Yeah, he also McCarthy. You know, they're happy so far with what they see out of those two guys. Ryu is like Greinke. He was set back because of a mild injury, and he'll get his first start. I think right now the starting rotation is the least of their concerns. They're more worried about the bullpen for obvious reasons. And they're a little uncertain about what's going to happen out in center field, which then will have a kind of a ripple effect through the bench. But the starting rotation right now, I think any team would like to be in the position they're in.
Speaking of the bullpen with Joel Peralta, so good news from him. He had a good bullpen session. Key acquisition in the offseason to try to rebuild this bullpen, so that's got to be a little bit of a relief for the team.
Yeah, you know, he's 39, and they really won't know, you know, until he pitches in some games and is able to bounce back regularly. That's what they need. Here, this guy has been durable through his whole career. He's kind of got a rubber arm, and that's why they got him, and that's what they need from him. So it's still too early to tell. You know, it's not a good sign when you come up with your first sore shoulder at the age of 39. So they are holding their breath a little bit, but so far they put him on a strengthening program and he seems to have responded well. And so far in the bullpens and the batting practice, he's been good, and they'll need to get him in games and see him go every other day and even back-to-back before they're really assured that he'll be ready for April.
And I was laughing a little bit on Corey Seager, so Dom Mattingly dropped he profiles as a big shortstop like Cal Ripken with a small swing like John Olerud. So throwing those names out. You know, every time a kid comes up and you see him, you're like, oh, he reminds me of so-and-so. And, you know, you try to kind of stay away from that because it puts undue pressure on these guys. But actually, Corey seemed to be pretty humored by it and didn't really take too much to heart.
Yeah, he's pretty cool, you know.
For a 20-year-old.
You know, and I think a lot of that has to do with the guy that he says he's always modeled himself after, and that's his brother. You know, big league third baseman for Seattle. And I think that the Dodgers view him as their shortstop for the future, but pretty soon as far as future goes, short-term future, by the end of this year or early next year. You know, they got Jimmy Rollins, and he's a quality player, but he's really only a placeholder if things go the way the Dodgers plan, and Seager will eventually take over that position, even though, you know, the reference to Cal Ripken, he's got a third baseman's body, but they keep referring to Cal Ripken because he didn't have to move over until he was well into his 30s. So they see that kind of potential out of Seager. So far, he's done everything they want him to do.
And Jimmy Rollins is probably a pretty good guy to be that placeholder, not only because he's a good player, but also because he would handle that well. Has he? Do you see him kind of working with the younger players? Does he work with Seager at all? Is he mentor at all?
Yeah, you know, they're usually on different fields because they're kind of in different squads. But you know, Jimmy Rollins, they knew, as you mentioned, when they got him, that this wasn't going to be a guy who's going to be looking over his shoulder and worrying about who's going to replace him. You know, he's in his late 30s. He might have one, you know, one more contract left, and it could even be with the Dodgers. They always could move Seager over to third base. But Rollins came over because he knows that for sure Seager isn't ready in April, and this team needs a quality shortstop to win the World Series. So there really isn't that concern about this guy, you know, knocking on the door and trying to take my job. They sort of have two different roles. Seager has to learn how to play to get to the big leagues. Rollins is here to try to win a World Series this year. So there's no friction, there's no problem. He has been a great role model, not only for Seager, but for any of the young players, just because of his resume when he walks in that room. You know, he's got the respect of everybody, old and young. So I can't imagine a better situation than the one they set up here at shortstop with those two.
Wonderful. Well, Ken, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week. Here live and in person. This is such a treat this whole week to do these podcasts in person with my favorite reporters. So we have Chris Haft here, who has been covering the Giants. And Chris, we have to start off with, every podcast I'm doing, it's a lot of injury news. Lots of guys kind of go down this time of year and then try to get back. But the Giants were dealt a really, really kind of devastating blow with Hunter Pence breaking a bone in his arm. So kind of one of those freak things. But let's just talk about that first of all, because last time we talked, it hadn't happened yet. So, what was the whole scene like and what was the aftermath from that?
Well, people were pretty stunned, obviously, to lose a player of that magnitude so suddenly. A lot of Giants fans obviously were upset with the manner in which it happened. Of course, a guy getting hit by a pitch. But, the Cubs pitcher, he just had no idea where home plate was. Those things happen in spring training. I think people know by now that Hunter exchanged tweets on Twitter, and where Hunter, the pitcher said, "I'm sorry." Hunter said, "Hey, it's okay." I mean, you know what kind of guy Hunter is. He's just such a good egg. And Hunter said, "It's part of the game. No problem. These things happen." So onward and upward. Hunter hopes he can come back by mid-April. That might be a little optimistic, but I'm thinking if he comes back by late April, early May, and he comes back strong and whole, the Giants will be lucky.
It's if there is a silver lining, and there really isn't, but let's make one up. It's that it happened early in spring. You'd hate to see something like this happen, like March 28th, when the rosters are being finalized, and then this happens. So at least it happened where it's like he's got like a full month of meaningless games that he's not going to be able to participate in, and then when they do finally start up again, it's really a small part of the season if you look at the big picture.
And that's the best way to look at it, yeah. In the big picture. I go way back with the Giants, Allison. I remember being rooting for him when I was a kid, and Willie McCovey, I forget if he got hit by a pitch, but he broke his arm somehow early in the 72 season when they were defending their division title. And they never got rolling after that. And so you're right. You're absolutely right. The timing, if it had to happen at a particular time, this was the right time.
So let's talk a little bit about what they're going to do in the meantime. So when he's out, and there might be a little shuffling, I know Bochy has talked about possible platoon situation with maybe Juan Perez and Gregor Blanco, with Aoki moving to right. Is that kind of the most likely scenario, or how are they going to patch it together?
That looks like the most likely scenario, but there's still 3 weeks left in spring training. I think he's going to try a lot of different things. Bruce has been known to play hot hands, gamble, shuffle the deck a little bit. I think he's going to do all that. He's going to try almost all possible combinations. Certain individuals, just today, Justin Maxwell is getting a shot. Maybe Blanco would end up playing right, because right field's a pretty tough place to play in San Francisco. And Blanco has more experience out there, obviously, than Nori Aoki does. So Bruce does have some options.
I like that Hunter, that's the beauty about Twitter. I mean, there's plenty of things that people don't like about Twitter, but the beauty is that you can kind of speak out and get your message across, and Hunter was like, guys, not dying, just broke a bone. So it is nice, and it is nice to go back to just him diffusing the situation with the Cubs pitcher and just making sure that didn't escalate anymore, because fans tend to get a little bit irrational about this stuff, and Hunter has been around long enough to understand that this is part of the game. So that was kind of nice to see.
Definitely was. Very sportsmanlike. fans let the situation escalate. The media does too, let's face it. We do. And so that nipped it all in the bud.
Okay, so on a happier note, Matt Cain had a very nice outing a few days ago. So he is just, you know, they're not looking for much in terms of results. They're just looking for him to kind of get back in the swing of things. And so 20 pitches in his first outing, which was 10 fewer than he was slotted for, which means that he was efficient and crisp and all of that. So everybody seemed to be pretty happy after that.
Real happy. It's just the start. You know, he may hit some bumps in the road here and there. Maybe not with the health, but you know, getting back his command, that sort of thing. But for a first outing, it certainly was a success.
What about some of the other injury, not so much injuries, but comebacks that we're looking at and guys that are sort of on the mend, or you know, Tim Hudson? I mean, what are some of the things that we should be looking at right now?
Tim Hudson's a real big one. I think that's the other – that is the other major one, really. He underwent all of a sudden – the news popped up in early January, late December, early January, that he was going to need right ankle surgery. I remember it happened right after I had been talking to Kim Hudson, Tim's wife, about for a Christmas-related charity story I was doing, and I felt silly because why didn't I ask more about Tim? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But anyway, he messed up his. He needed a little help, some clean out with his ankle. It's the same ankle he broke and had operated on the year before when he had that horrific injury covering first base in New York.
That was terrible.
When he was still with the Braves. Oh. That's right. It was terrible. But he came back from that last year, and he's very confident he'll come back from that this year. This probably will be his last season in the major leagues, and so he wants to go out strong.
A lot of players, they do that. They if they get injured, that's not how they want it to end. And they'll.
No.
I remember Brad Ausmus, even his last season, he was never on the DL in like 18 years in the big leagues until his last season. So he had surgery and then he came back and just played a little bit. And then so that's kind of important to these guys to end on a non-injured note.
It's funny how that happened. You know, you watch guys in batting practice and they don't want to end up with a pop up or something like that. They want to end up with a lot of it's mental. And these guys, almost to a man, you know, they've got their professional pride. And so, yeah, I mean. Tim Hudson's probably at the end of the road, but he wants that last step on the road to be on the good foot, so to speak.
He deserves it, too.
He sure does.
He had a heck of a career.
Leading active winner right now in the major leagues, and I'd say borderline Hall of Fame candidate. I don't know. Yeah, it so much depends on the climate at the time when you become a candidate, when you get on the ballot, I should say. But 200 plus wins, I'd say he's, some people would say he's a pretty viable candidate.
So educate me a little bit on this, because I have not spent a ton of time at Cactus League, Arizona spring training, having been, I don't want to say stuck in Florida for 15 years. That would be unsportsmanlike. But okay, so, the Yankees are known as the Yankees. They go from park to park, and there's mostly Yankees fans. Okay, so the Giants have built, of course, winning 3 World Series in the last 5 years. So they've built quite a nice little showing. Is this how it is? Like, there are a lot of Giants fans here. We happen to be doing this on a day that they're playing the Padres at the Padres home park. Mostly Giants fans in the stands. Is that kind of how it is when you're traveling around the Cactus League here?
Allison, it's become that way the last 2 or 3 years, especially since they started winning all these World Series. I think it was they always had a pretty strong following here historically. But once they started winning these titles, it started getting, I shouldn't say ridiculous, just extreme. Almost every park is a home game for them. It's uncanny. The pitchers will get a standing ovation when they walk out to warm up. You know, if Buster Posey sticks his head out of the dugout, you know, the face of baseball, you know, gotta applaud. Bruce Bochy gets a hand when he goes to the mound.
Bochy got a hand just after they took infield, just walking back to the clubhouse.
Exactly.
People
there
went nuts.
Go.
It's like Elvis.
He loves being competitive.
Elvis Bochy.
He loves to hear that comparison. But, they are. Even before they started winning, I had heard that because I had been new to the Cactus League relatively at that point, that the three teams that drove the Cactus League at that time were the Giants, the Cubs, and the Angels. Mm-hmm. Angels, I think, partly because they had been a successful team, and Tempe Diablo Stadium's a nice place to watch a game. The Cubs, you know, they had such a tradition there at Hohokam Park in Mesa. They've got their own new complex now, and the A's are in Hohokam. But the Giants pretty much Phoenix is their second home, and you'll hear it in the regular season when they play the Diamondbacks. You know, there's a lot of Giants fans at games. So, yeah, they've turned it into a nice little cottage industry for themselves.
I wonder when it'll be where they're known as the quote-unquote hated Giants, like they hated Yankees, but I don't think they're quite there yet.
I've wondered that. May take another if they somehow won the World Series in one of the next 2 years. I think
Yeah.
But they haven't reached that point yet.
I mean, it's pretty much a dynasty, even though people are still saying, "Is this a dynasty?" Yes, it's a dynasty. But you know, I don't know that anybody really wants to call it that for whatever reason. But it's you have to think it's a dynasty.
Sure. Gosh, 3 out of 5. That's not bad.
Okay. Well, Chris, thank you so much. It was wonderful seeing you. I'll be seeing you again next week, and we'll catch up. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Allison.
Here with Corey Brock, who covers the Padres for MLB.com for our weekly chat. But we're together in Arizona as opposed to doing this by phone. So this is quite a treat. So, Corey, let's just start off with some injury news. So catcher Tim Fedorovich, some bad news on him. So why don't you give us an update on that?
Yeah, and congratulations on nailing the pronunciation, Allison. That was really good. I thought we agreed just to call him Tim, but no, yeah. Yeah, Tim Fedorovich, a backup catcher, sort of slated to fill in for Derek Norris, kind of the number two catcher. He was acquired in the Matt Kemp deal from the Dodgers. He suffered a lateral meniscus tear of his right knee playing defense here on Sunday against the Rockies. He's having surgery this week, and that will determine how significant the tear is. Now, this could be an injury that could keep him out 4 to 6 weeks. If the tear is more significant, it would certainly keep him on the shelf longer. So, you know, the Padres probably kind of waiting to see what the result of that's going to be, the prognosis, whether they determine they need to add some more catching depth, which, you know, is hard to come by. It's kind of like middle infield help. You know, there are catchers around, but finding good ones that could kind of handle that job is tough. They'll use Will Nieves now, who I think a lot of fans recognize the name. You know, he's played for 7 different teams over 11 years. He's 37 years old, has a very good reputation, and knows the league, certainly. So, but yeah, really, that was the first injury of note that we've had in camp so far.
And that's kind of, I wasn't Nieves, he was a little bit of a late sign, and that's kind of why these guys are signed, right? And especially catching help. I mean, you have to have some guys that are just here to catch bullpens and just be in camp, but you need backup plans to backup plans to backup plans, so it's kind of nice to have him.
Isn't that funny? Well, the team doesn't probably think it's funny, but yeah, you build these contingencies in and you add all this depth at these critical positions just on the off chance that something happens, and sure enough, I mean, there isn't a spring that goes by, either with the Padres or, you know, another team throughout baseball, where somebody doesn't get hurt and teams are sort of left scrambling a little bit. So the less scrambling you could do means that you've done some nice things in terms of building the roster, building your depth. So the Padres still feel pretty good about where they're at. They'll keep an eye on this situation, but you know, yeah, certainly injuries are terrible, but they feel like they've done a pretty good job preparing for this.
Okay, so we were talking about Jose Valverde this morning, and he's a very interesting guy. He's had a long career as a closer in Major League Baseball and then kind of has hung around a little bit in the last few years. So even though he's a non-roster invitee, there's been a little talk that he may find his way into this bullpen. What do you think of him?
Yeah, pretty good buzz. And, you know, I'd never covered him really before and only had seen him from the other side a little bit. Certainly spent a lot of time in the American League, but you're familiar with Papa Grande and his antics on the mound, and you're familiar with the success that he's had. I mean, this guy was a dynamite closer for a long time, logged a lot of innings, and the last few years have been rough on him. But, you know, as it turns out, as he told me the other day for a story I wrote, that because his 2013 and 14 seasons were cut short by being released, he went home, just sort of kept his body in shape, and gave his arm a rest, and he felt like his velocity really came back this past winter. The Padres called up their catcher at the time, Yasmani Grandal, who they've since moved to the Dodgers, checked in with him and say, "Hey, just by chance, is anybody throwing very well down there? And Grandal's like, yeah, you should come look at Valverde. So they sent Omar Minaya, a senior advisor, who of course and now has also left the organization, to go work for the Players Association, and he confirmed that. And so they signed Valverde to a contract. You know, the guy's only 36 years old. He was touching 96, 97 the other day. He has a couple saves for whatever that's worth in Cactus League play, which is nothing. But, you know, the teammates, the coaching staff, they really like being around this guy. And Bud Black, I think, Allison, really put it best that, like, when you watch this guy from the other side of the field and you see him kind of celebrating and all that, it kind of maybe looks a little quirky and a little weird. And but once you see him in camp, the way he deals with the young Latin players, his work ethic, how hard he goes at it, takes good care of himself, is in great shape, and how much he's enjoying the game, I think you start to view things through a different lens. And I think probably anyone that's had him for a teammate for any prolonged period of time would probably agree.
Is there room for him? Like, where is the bullpen shaking out, and who would he have to beat out?
Yeah, there's a lot of competition for those jobs in the bullpen. You know, they have some talented back-end guys. They added Sean Kelly from the Yankees, Brandon Maurer from the Mariners. Those guys factor in there to set up Joaquin Benoit. But
and those guys are not really competing for jobs as much as
they're here.
To blow up in order to not get the job.
Yeah, and some guys that have had success in the past are going to have to win some spots. You know, Dale Thayer, Alex Torres, Nick Vincent, Kevin Quackenbush, who filled in a little bit and got a few saves last year. There's going to be some tight competition. And maybe there's a possibility the Padres can move a guy at some point. You know, teams are always looking for arms, but they've got a lot of depth there, which is a good thing. And, you know, people are like, well, how is this all going to sort out? It always seems to, like, take care of itself. So it could make for some interesting decisions.
And let's move around the diamond a little bit, talk about some other just position battles and kind of competition. We talk a lot about the guys that have come here and have reshaped this roster. Very exciting moves, but there are still some positions that need to be settled. And where does that stand?
Yeah, kind of the corner infield is probably the two biggest ones, also the number five starter. But in terms of third base, Will Middlebrooks, who they acquired from the Red Sox, and their incumbent there, Jan Hervis Solarte, who is kind of a versatile player. A.J. Hinch actually acquired him last year from the Yankees in the Chase Headley deal. He could play some first base, play some third base, a National League bench piece moving forward, but you know, he's not going to go quietly either. So Yonder Alonso's looked very good early in camp. He's had some injuries the last few years, but this is a guy that hit like 39 doubles a couple years ago. They would love to see a bounce back year. So there could be some platoon splits moving forward, but at the very least, they're going to have some interesting names on the bench. But you know, by the time they break camp on April 2nd, I think they'll have a lot of these questions answered.
Thank you so much, Corey. We will check back with you next week. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Allison.
Live and in person, I am sitting here with Thomas Harding, who fearlessly covers your Colorado Rockies for MLB.com. And Thomas, let us talk about some of the guys whose names are on everyone's minds and now on everyone's scorecards, because Carlos Gonzalez, Troy Tulowitzki are back in action, and they seem to be feeling pretty good. What did they say about sort of their first stints at the plate?
Well, the first time in a game, Troy Tulowitzki has a runner at first, a runner at third, and he pops out to the catcher. And after it, he's mad because he doesn't get a hit. So that means that he's in play mode. He's ready to play. Same with Carlos Gonzalez. He's just a happy guy just to be back on the field. I mean, those guys were like the Snuffleupagus there for a while. You know, everyone talked about them and said they existed, but did they really? They did show up this week, and now I think the Rockies can start looking at their roster for 2015 and seeing where they can juggle some things, get the most they can out of their bench, and really home in on the pitching staff now that they know they have their lineup together.
And from what I hear, he ain't heavy. He's Rex Brothers. So he also made an appearance recently. And what did you think about him?
I'll tell you, we smiled on Rex Brothers. We all got together and loved one another because he threw 93 to 95 on the fastball. And the slider was very crisp his first time out. It seemed that last year he got completely out of whack on his mechanics, his leg kick, his arm. Everything looked different. it looked like the old Rex Brothers as far as the motion is concerned. He's also coming at it a little bit different physically. He was a guy who did a lot of presses and squats and had heavy muscles in his chest and legs. Now he's dropped, I think it's 12 pounds, and he's a lot leaner player, and he's going to see how this works for him. He says he may go back to the old style, but he thought that his body needed a break from some of the muscle.
So here's what's happening. We're at the first week of games of spring training, first week or so, and when we're talking about the Colorado Rockies, it's going to be a lot of, okay, now let's talk about this guy's coming back from an injury. Let's talk about this guy's coming back from an injury. And hey, that's just how it's going to be until we get to opening day. So let's talk about Julius Chacin. Sorry if I said his first name wrong. So he is also looking at his first game action since a very, very long time ago. So what's going on with him?
Well, he's thrown a couple of times now. Julius Chacin. I love that name, Julius Chacin. It beats Julius Chacon or something like that. But Julius, every time that you see him, he looks a little bit better. Like the first bullpen session looked really weird, then the second time it was better. First couple times facing hitters was kind of rough, then it started looking better. And I had a talk with him about this recently. He says, sometimes you can't feel it when you're doing it. You have to do it for a while, look at the film, make your corrections, and then eventually you start getting the feel of it. This is a guy who struck out a lot of hitters in 2013 and went 14-10 with a 3.47 ERA. I mean, he was one of the better pitchers in the National League West, and you're expecting him to take another step forward last year. He was the opening day starter, he was supposed to be the opening day starter, I should say, but the shoulder injury bothered him then.
So now we move on to a guy like Kyle Kendrick. Not a guy like Kyle Kendrick. Actually, Kyle Kendrick we're going to talk about. So he's in a different situation. And this is what's great about being a veteran guy in big league camp is that you can just kind of work on things, as they say. So he was saying in his first outing, he was kind of working on his sinker and his changeup. He's going to start working on his curveball later. That's a nice thing for a player, a nice luxury, that they can come here and just work on stuff.
And it is a nice luxury for him because when he was in Philadelphia, he had so many veterans around him, Roy Halladay, Cole Hamels, even Jamie Moyer was on the staff, who's a veteran everywhere. So he's gone from the little brother to literally the guy that other guys tag along behind. Christian Bergman, one of the right-handers who was forced into action last year, he put his locker right beside Kyle Kendrick's and said that he actually watched Kyle Kendrick on tape last year, not knowing he was going to be a teammate of his. So it's a completely different look to spring training for Kyle Kendrick right now, and the Rockies are looking at him as a guy who, if he gives them, you know, around 200 innings, they feel like it'll help set up the staff and cut some of the wear and tear on the bullpen.
I found it interesting. Walt Weiss, when he was talking to the media recently, was saying that he has he's kind of a kindred spirit with Troy Tulowitzki because they both not only played the same position, but Walt had quite a few injury issues during his playing career, and he said they just didn't quite know what the problem was. He probably had a lot of sports hernias that weren't properly diagnosed because they just hadn't really experienced what those were. So that's kind of interesting. Is that helpful to a guy like Tulowitzki to get through some of the recent things he's had to get through to know that his manager totally knows where he's coming from?
Yeah, Walt Weiss played, the last 3 or 4 years of his career with problems in the hip. The term sports hernia didn't even exist when he was going through it, so he was playing and hurting the last few years of his career. Also, Walt Weiss has the unique thing of having played at Coors Field and in Denver and in the altitude, and there will be people who say, oh, the altitude is an excuse. I don't care. People get hurt there. We've seen 20-some years of evidence that says people get hurt there more than other places. With Tulowitzki, what you're hoping is that they've gotten to the root of the problem. When you hear of a hip labrum surgery, usually the player who has it has experienced problems with pulled muscles, groin, sports hernia, and all those things, and probably for years knew that the hip labrum was damaged. It's just a very hard rehab, and if you don't have to have the surgery, you don't have it. And finally, last year, it got to the point to where, Troy, you need to go get this taken care of, and maybe this will help the rest of your career.
What about some other just kind of like little aches and pains, little nicks here and there that you don't really quite worry about, but there are some things to keep an eye on? Jorge De La Rosa, did he have some recent things that were holding him back?
Yeah, it was a very slight groin issue. He has something, it's either the groin or the back, and it happens about this time of year. It's part of the pattern of his life. My back hurts, my groin hurts. Then when he gets into the season, he has blister problems or bruised thumb. And usually, if he's struggling and then he bruises his thumb or has a blister problem, that's when he really pitches well. So, you know, these things, sometimes you worry about injuries, and sometimes it's like, okay, Jorge's getting ready for the season, and sometimes you even end up welcoming the injuries because for some reason he does well with them.
I thought it was interesting also that Walt Weiss felt that the pace of game, new kind of rules, which I think he agrees are just similar to the old rules, just enforcing them. So I like that, but he thinks that they're subtle enough that it's going to, eventually everyone's going to sort of catch on to it, and it's not going to be that disruptive. That was nice to hear from a manager who manages the Colorado Rockies, by the way.
That's right, because the Rockies have some of the slowest pitchers and hitters in baseball. Now, the first game that Troy Tulowitzki played, he took a called strike and stepped both feet out of the batter's box. Then you could see him almost leaping back in, like the kid at recess who gets out of line, and when the teacher looks, he jumps back in. That is something that he'll have to work on. He has a tendency to walk around the batter's box, and certainly if he swings or fouls a pitch off, people have to understand that he can still do that. He'll walk around, he'll fiddle with his batting gloves, and 35 seconds later the next pitch comes. But when you take a pitch, whether it's a strike or a ball, and the pitch doesn't force you out of the box, you are supposed to keep at least 1 foot in the box and stay in the box. That could be an issue because he's pretty forceful about his strike zone, and he has been known to turn to an umpire and say, that's not a strike. And so we'll see how this happens, because as I was doing stories about this, Justin Morneau was saying that if you disagree with the pitch, one of the things they teach a hitter to do is step out, collect your thoughts. You really can't do that anymore, and with Tulowitzki it'll be interesting. I mean, even though he's been tossed from a few games, he's never cursed at an umpire, but he was tossed from one, I never will forget, I think it was in Atlanta, and when you started asking questions as to why and why Walt Weiss didn't get him, the conversation went like this: that's not a strike. And the umpire says,
yes, it is.
That's not a strike.
Yes, it is.
And it kept going to the point that the umpire said, see you later, Troy. So, you know, if he's taking pitches that he doesn't feel are strikes and the umpire's calling them strikes, I could see where not being able to step out could work on his routine. And they have several hitters who do take a little bit of time in the box, but they also have Drew Stubbs and Justin Morneau who get in there and get it over with. They want a quick decision.
Is there a thing where bullpen guys have to run in now? They were kind of talking about that, like that's a new rule that they have to run and they can't walk?
No, they have 2 minutes and 30 seconds
to
get the next at-bat going. And there are some pitchers who like to jog in or run in. There are some who like to walk in. And the question that you have in the altitude of Coors Field is, if you're jogging in, are you winded at the start of an inning? There are a lot of guys who like to walk in. And I go back, and whenever people talk about that, they're like, what? These pitchers, they run a few feet and that's over? I go back to the Mike Hampton days. And it seemed invariably, third out of an inning, Mike Hampton would ground out in the infield, and you probably saw this in Houston. He's trying to beat it out because he could absolutely fly. Well, the first couple of pitches of the next inning, they were likely to go out of the ballpark because he's just totally winded from that. So here's what I think happens with that, and also even with Tulowitzki in the batter's box and a few other things. If the umpire understands the situation, like, hey, we're up here at 5,280 feet, and the umpire is saying, yeah, I'm kind of winded now, then maybe he massages the 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Or if a guy tends to step out of the batter's box, as long as he doesn't step out, go get a Gatorade, maybe chew on a energy bar, just say, just get back in here quickly, and we'll keep this rolling. So some of it has to be the umpire's sense of pace of the game.
Very interesting. Well, that'll be something we'll keep our eye on. And T. Harding, thank you very much for your time as always. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you. It was great doing this face-to-face.
We should do this more often.
No doubt.
Joined by my wonderful colleague and friend, Steve Gilbert, covers the team every single day of the calendar year for the most part. And Steve, let's just talk a little bit about some of the things that we've been following along for the last few weeks and months. And Yasmani Tomas, so we've seen him a little bit at third base. And, everyone just keeps talking about what a great bat he has.
They feel like physically he can play the position, that he's kind of picking that stuff up pretty well, that that it's more the mental side. It's more staying focused every single pitch that Chip Hale would like to see him kind of improve on. He thinks that would greatly help him out there. So they're going to give him every opportunity to play third. They had talked earlier this spring about giving him some reps in the outfield, but they don't feel like they need to do that. They feel like they know that he can play the outfield, so if they decide to make a move and move him off of third base, they don't feel like he needs many reps during spring training. So they're going to keep him at third base as long as they can this spring and give him every opportunity to show that he can handle it.
What do you think? I mean, just from your observations, watching him play third base, what goes through your mind when you watch him?
You know, I think he moves a little bit better than I thought he would. I think sometimes he gets a little caught in between whether the backhand or forehand of ball when he's moving to his left or to his right. He seems to come in really nice. He fielded a bunt the other day, barehanded, threw off balance at first base. So it seems to be just more the kind of moving laterally that seems to trip him up a little bit. And the biggest thing for them is they just want him to play average to slightly below average defense. And if he hits, that's enough for them. But they're not looking for him to be like, Brooks Robinson or anything over there.
No, I mean, not Brooks Robinson and, not necessarily winning a gold glove. But at the same time, that's an important – I mean, they're all important defensive positions. But, is below average defense is going to be good enough for them? I mean, can that sustain over a whole season?
If it's slightly below average and if he hits like they believe he's capable of hitting, then I think they could try and live with that. But he's got a hit, and it can't be the kind of defense that costs them games and that kind of thing. But if he's just, makes the routine plays, they'll be happy with that.
Okay, so let's talk about let's just say that he doesn't, that he ends up not playing third base. There's competition at third base. The job hasn't been handed to him, so who else might be in the mix at third?
Well, they have another prospect, Jake Lamb, that they like a lot. They got a look at him last year, the last 2 months of the season, and he played very good defense for him. Defense was not an issue for Jake Lamb. He's an excellent defender. He didn't hit particularly well at the big league level last year, but there was a lot thrown at him. It was the longest season he'd ever been a part of, so he probably wore down a little bit towards the end of last year. He's come to camp this year, and Tony La Russa used the quote a couple of weeks ago that it seemed like this guy is oozing talent. So they really like him a lot. He's certainly a guy that he had two home runs the other day in a Cactus League game. So he's a guy that if Tomas can't play third, they feel like he can't play third or is not ready for the big leagues. Look for Jake Lamb to kind of get the first crack at third base.
Cool. And let's move on to maybe some injury updates. I know Oscar Hernandez, a Rule 5 catcher, they're taking a good long look at. He had a little bit of a bruise on his left wrist. What's going on with that? And is there anything else injury-wise? Are there any updates to any other players?
Well, we found out Wednesday morning that Oscar Hernandez has a fractured hamate bone, and he's going to have surgery on Thursday, the 12th. And,
oh, no.
He is going to be done for, the next 4 to 6 weeks before he can start playing ball again. So, in a certain sense, it's not the worst-case scenario for him because he still gets big league service time over these next 4 weeks, and then he'll get an extended time down in the minor leagues on a rehab assignment that maybe they can use to get him some look at some more advanced pitching that he saw last year in Class A ball. So maybe, then when he's ready to be activated, maybe he can actually aid a little bit in his development.
Okay, so basically they would, put him on the roster and then DL him. And then they don't have any kind of time frame where they'd have to bring him back. It would just be like,
correct.
So
the only favor. Right. The only technicality to the rule is that he has to spend 90 days on the active roster. So he needs to spend 90 days at some point on the active roster. That's to prevent teams from DLing somebody and keeping him there all year long. So even if this were an extended injury, let's say he's only able to get 45 days in the big leagues because of the injury, he would need to spend 45 days on the big league roster next year or be offered back to the Rays. So they don't think it's going to be that significant, that serious, 4 to 6 weeks, and then a rehab stint for him, and that could put him back in the big leagues in June.
Okay. Well, let's move on to some happier news. It wasn't a huge surprise when Josh Hohlmetter was named the opening day starter. But still, it's a fun little rite of passage that you have during spring training when the manager makes it official. So, you know, they like to do that. It makes the guy feel good. And I guess it did not come as a shock to you.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we kind of expected it to be Josh, just given the relative youth of the rest of the rotation. Really, the only other legitimate candidate would have been like a Jeremy Hellickson, and, you know, he just came over in a deal this winter, so it would have been hard to see them choose, it would have been a surprise to see them choose Hellickson over over the veteran like Kolmetter. So, again, you know, we always make a big deal, as you pointed out, about the opening day starter. Who's it going to be? And, oh, wow, you're the opening day starter. But, you know, then as soon as the game starts and the first off day hits, everybody's number ones and number fives and fours, and they all get mixed up, and so it doesn't seem to be a factor. But certainly, it's an honor to throw the first pitch of the season for your team. So it was kind of nice to see Josh get that, just because he's a guy that has kind of flown under the radar and been a little bit underappreciated, and you know, it's nice to see guys like that get a chance.
So this is a fun little story. The Diamondbacks have just had their 20th birthday, and I, of course, got a little confused at the beginning because I could have sworn that this team started playing in 98, but they were awarded the expansion franchise by Major League Baseball on March the 9th, 1995. So it was expansion franchises went to Arizona and Tampa Bay. So they're I don't think they're blowing this out for the whole season, but it is kind of a nice thing to be able to recognize that. What are some of the things that they're doing to celebrate this birthday?
You know, it was one of the things where you bring up a great point, because they were confused as to exactly how to celebrate this, because, you know, they didn't want fans to be confused because they didn't start play until 98. But they were awarded the franchise in 95. So they decided to kind of do a low-key celebration and call it a birthday celebration. And they had they put Luis Gonzalez in a purple convertible along with his big-headed racing legend that they have, you know, racing, kind of like the racing right. presidents in Washington. So they put the two of them in the back seat of this convertible with the World Series trophy, and they drove around all over Phoenix from one side to the other, surprising fans and to celebrate the birthday. And I got to tell you, in following along in the van behind, the looks that people gave when they pulled up, you know, alongside this purple car with this big-headed mascot in it next to Luis Gonzalez, it was worth going along just to see that.
I mean, seriously, if you're a Diamondbacks fan and you have the mascot and Gonzo together, I mean, I don't know if it gets much better than that.
I mean, it was hilarious because, you know, we just stopped at random places and we stopped someplace to have lunch, and Gonzo's sitting outside eating his witch sandwich with the World Series trophy sitting next to him on the table. And we're coming up and saying, hey, can I take a picture with you? And I put down a sandwich, and they would take the picture there. So it was it's just not a sight that you're used to seeing every day.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you, Steve. And even though we did this one on the phone, I believe I'm going to see you in person next week. So we will gather then. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.